Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Bo Doss, 14 years of combination experience, third generation firefighter. Firefighter paramedic with Franklin Fire Department in Tennessee, where he's currently assigned to Engine and Tower 2. Bo's journey into the fire service started at a very young age. When he turned 18, he ventured away from home and did what a good number of individuals are doing now, which is becoming out-of-state members with organizations that uphold the traditions of being a firefighter and into the job. Throughout his career, Bo has been a part of some top-notch organizations, including the City of Murfreesboro and Memphis Fire Department. But sometimes the man upstairs has a different path for us that puts us exactly where we need to be. Bo is a huge advocate for mentorship and showing any new individual coming into this profession what the job should be, and I truly hope the listeners can pick up on what he's putting down. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and hope you all do as well. With that, I present Bo Doss.
Hello, everybody. My name is Bo Doss. I currently work in Franklin, Tennessee, Franklin Fire Department. I have roughly 14 years combined of career and volunteer experience. I'm a third generation firefighter. My grandfather worked for the Roanoke, Virginia Fire Department, along with several great uncles and cousins of my grandfather. And that's where my dad grew up. My dad got a start outside of Roanoke in Benton, Virginia. It's a small volunteer department. And so growing up, I was always wanted to be a firefighter. I didn't know anything different. And my dad ended up meeting my mom, moved down here, and he got hired at Franklin Fire Department. So he did 28 years and retired as a lieutenant in Franklin. So I'm a second generation at Franklin. And then so growing up, we would always take family trips to Roanoke, and my dad would take me to firehouses, and they have a bunch of old firehouses with poles and old school doors, and the stairs and floors are about to give way, you know, and it just smells like diesel smoke and fires, you know, and hearing the stories of my grandfather being a fireman in the 60s, you know, I never wanted to do anything else. So shout out to any guys working at Roanoke. I still love that fire department. But so growing up, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to get into it, you know, and about 13, Franklin has an Explorer post. So when I was 13, I joined the Fire Explorers and started going to work with my dad on every Saturday that I could. Any Saturday he worked, I'd go ride with him. And so my first day ever riding at Franklin was Christmas Eve 2006. And I rode Engine 2, which is where I'm currently assigned, which is pretty neat. My first shift at Franklin ended up being the first place I ever rode a fire truck. So when I did that for till I was 18, about 16, I was asking my dad, what else do I need to do, you know, to get in the fire department? He said, well, you need to join the volunteer department, get some classes. Then when you graduate, you need to get your EMT, you know. So I went, my dad took me around Rutherford County, Tennessee. A lot of listeners might be familiar with them. Back then, there was 11 different volunteer fire departments in the county rescue squad. So it's a lot different than it was now. And he took me around the different volunteer departments on their training nights, trying to see where a good fit for me was. Our second stop was about 10 minutes from our house, or 15 or so, and it's called Las Casas, Tennessee. It's a small community that had two stations, ran about 200 calls a year. And I joined as a volunteer as a junior firefighter. And then just riding there, spending every breathing, waking moment that I could at the firehouse, you know, I couldn't get enough of it. And then when I was my senior year of high school, I turned 18. So I actually went through my basic firefighter rookie school while I was in high school my last year. So by the time I was about to graduate, I could go to the house fires. And so then after that, I volunteered for a while and growing and throughout high school, I always wanted to be busier. I wanted to go to the big department. And so when we were sitting in computer lab, I was on YouTube watching fire videos, and I came across Prince George's County, Maryland. And so I was watching PG County videos when I should have been doing my computer lab skills. And I decided I wanted to go be a live-in in PG. So about right after I graduated, when I was changing oil on cars, I was starting to plan to move, and I reached out to a few different fire departments up there, and I ended up getting contact with Bladensburg Volunteer Fire Department, which is very close proximity to Kentland, if anybody's familiar. And they offered to pick me up from the airport, let me come ride along for a week. And so I flew up there in July that year. And the first five calls they went on, I missed the engine. That's how fast they got out the door. And it was a culture shock to what I'm used to. I'm used to small community. We're waiting on somebody to drive the engine. We're gonna set up, a tanker shuttle on fires. Very different, but it's everything I wanted. So I ended up in August, about a month later, moving up there and became a live-in. And but the only thing is, I didn't have fire one, and I didn't have EMT, so I couldn't do anything but catch the plug. I rode up as the hookup man, and I found a fire one class, and I was driving an hour and a half to go to fire one class in Maryland. And I, as much as I loved my time there, I got really homesick. I was an 18-year-old kid, and I'd never been anywhere. Where I grew up in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, was a small town at the time. It's not a small town anymore, but I hadn't, ever been anywhere like that. I could sit on the roof of the firehouse and see the U.S. Capitol, and so I just got really homesick. And guys tried to talk me into staying. There were some great guys there, but I just made up my mind I was going to go home. And I regretted that for a while, even though I had a blast with my buddies back on the small volunteer fire department. I kind of regret it for a while. And I always talked about going back. And then 2014, I changed volunteer fire departments. And in Rutherford County, and about the northwest corner, there's a volunteer department called Almaville Volunteer Fire Department. And compared to us running 200 and last gases, they're running about 800 or 900 calls to sometimes 1,000 and three stations. And it's totally different. Those guys had just gone to like Kentland training days, and they were trying to implement a lot of PG County stuff. So it was a little bit of both worlds, best of both worlds. And it was awesome. They had this old Pierce that had a power call on it, and all the lines were, and the guys were pulling shift, starting the saws and going to the gym and eating together. And, we couldn't get anybody to hang out at the firehouse and stay overnight in the last gases, but a few of us young guys. And so I joined there, and it was pretty cool because after you joined, the officers took you upstairs to the day room, and they set you down, and they said, "Look, here at Almaville, we expect you to be a fireman, and we fully support you being a fireman. And we go inside, we cut roofs. This is a fast-paced organization. We cut a lot of cars on the interstate. It was awesome to just hear that in a volunteer organization, And so I volunteered there for a while. Made a lot of fires and a lot of runs. My first good interior fire on the nozzle, we're actually in there, and I heard the chainsaw on the roof, and I'm like, "What the heck is that?" I wasn't used to that, So ended up staying there for about 5 years. And in the mix of that, I went to EMT school, and I passed my EMT, and I met my wife. And that's another reason why I didn't go back to PG, because I met my wife, and we started dating and ended up getting married. And I was testing all over the place. I tested around here. I tested in Lexington, Kentucky. I went to Knoxville, all over, like everybody does trying to get a job. And I tested in my hometown of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And when I went to my second interview with the training chief, I said, "Hey, chief, I just passed my EMT, but I don't have it in hand. It's coming in the mail, but it says online I passed, blah, blah, blah." Well, he dropped me from a process since I didn't have it in my hand. And luckily, right about the same time I tested them, I tested for a little town called Spring Hill, Tennessee, three station department. And one of Franklin's retired lieutenants was the fire chief there. So about a month after Murfreesboro dropped me, they called me and hired me. And so that 2015 was the first year I got on the career fire department. And awesome guys there, small department, but great culture and great guys. But I just wasn't making anything. I started at $32,000 a year, and that's not a lot, even 10 years ago, And so when the next year came up and Murfreesboro started hiring again, I reapplied and got on. And I went over there, got hired with about 10 guys. And they're at the time, Murfreesboro had 10 stations, they're up to 11. It's a lot busier. I got like a $13,000 pay raise right off the bat, And so I was a fireman there for almost 5 years and ended up riding a heavy rescue for 2.5 years. And got involved with the high rise committee, the hose and nozzle committee, and changing a lot of things. And then I still wanted to work for a big city. I had that big city itch. I tested for Nashville, sat on the list for a while, didn't get hired. And right around COVID, right before COVID happened, my in-laws uprooted. And my father-in-law was always that guy that was like, stay somewhere 30 years, stay in the same place, don't leave. And that man left before his retirement and went off to be a partner with another guy in a company, like totally against everything he ever told me and my wife. So after that, my wife was like, "Well, let's move, we can move if you want to, So looked to go to Wichita, Kansas, because they had moved to Kansas City. And at the time, I didn't really, besides KCMO, there wasn't any fire departments in the area I liked, and you had to live in Kansas City to work for KCMO. And so I looked to go into Wichita because Isaac Frazier had just a few years before that had gone to Wichita. And so we went down there, looked at houses. I went, rode along to Rescue One with Isaac and had a blast. Anybody that knows about Wichita knows they have an awesome fire department, And then that you had to have your EMT in the state of Kansas to be able to apply. And I tried to get an out-of-state license, and then they said I couldn't get one, so I couldn't apply. And so we were driving back from Kansas, and my wife said, "Well, what about Memphis?" I'm like, "What do you mean, what about Memphis? You never, you know, I would love to work there, but I thought I'd have to be single to go down there." And she's like, "Well, it gives everything you ever wanted out of the job, and we know somebody down there, and we should go check it out." And so one of my buddies, Jeff Sharp, he worked at Spring Hill with me, and he ended up going down to Memphis, and everybody was shocked that he went. And ever since then, he was like, "You need to come down here, man. It's a great place to be a fireman, And so we went and visited them and looked around, and she rode around with his wife to look at houses. And we rode around in the ghetto and look at firehouses, And on the way back, she was like, "Okay, you can apply." So I applied. The very next week, I had an interview, and an academy was in 4 months. So we packed up. I started the academy there in February 2021, and got out of. We went through a lateral 8-week academy, and got assigned to a truck company, Truck Two. Right out of the academy, it was the only single truck company left in the city. And you're sitting in between a ghetto, shotgun houses and downtown high rises. It was the best of both worlds, And had an awesome crew, awesome officer there, one of the best guys I ever worked for. And so worked there for a while, and about a year on Truck Two, and bounced to got detailed a lot to Truck 11, which is a much slower truck. And that's a long story why that happened, but I just wasn't happy. I loved Truck Two, but then they weren't letting me go back because they wanted me to ride an ambulance. And in Memphis, you ride an ambulance every single day, 12 hours on the ambulance 12 hours on the engine or truck. And so I'm like, well, if I'm gonna ride an ambulance every day, I wanna go where I wanna go. You know, I wanna go somewhere I actually wanna be. And I had always looked up to the 17s. The 17s in Memphis was a great house. In two-story engine truck chief, you know, busy. And I didn't know anybody over there. And they had a spot come open. And I called over there and asked the lieutenant, and he was like, you know, well, I got a couple of people in mind, you know, but I'll let you know. And I was like, well, I just wanted you to know, lieutenant, you know, I'm truck qualified, which I could drive the truck, and I was an advanced DMT. And he sort of perked up, and he's like, you know what, I might give you a call back, you know. And so about a week or two span after that, lieutenants and guys that I worked with that knew him kept giving them phone calls. And my reputation that I've built in that short amount of time got a phone call back from him. So I went over there, didn't know anybody. It actually worked out because all the firemen were around my age and were into the job. And it was an awesome place to be a fireman, you know. The busiest truck company in the city. Lots of fires, lots of runs, the ambulances. So the trucks were making about 4,600 runs a year, and the ambulance doing about the same. So not a lot of sleep happening there, but it was a great experience. And then in Memphis, you have to become a paramedic or you're fired. You know, they have contract obligations where you have to have your fire certs a certain amount of time, and you have to have your paramedic. Well, the only thing I didn't have was medic. So 2023, I ended up going to paramedic school and only had to pay for books and uniforms, which is great. About 3 months into school, we had our second kid. And so in between working and being up all night riding the ambulance and having a kid, I had to go to school and clinicals, and it was a really tough year, but totally worth it at the end. But in that time frame, I kind of got really burned out. You know, Memphis was always a place that we didn't know was we were going to stay or we were going to go. You know, because we talked about moving different up to Kansas where parents were, or talked about going to Texas. I always wanted to go to the colony, you know, with Scott Thompson's the chief, you know, and you had to be a paramedic to even get hired there. So I was like, well, I'll just get my medic and maybe we'll go down there. And so we started looking around, and I ended up testing for a fire department outside of Kansas City called Olathe Fire Department. There are about eight stations. And if anybody's in the Kansas, Missouri area, that's a place to be a fireman at. I mean, they have the money to support training and equipment, and but they have a great fire service culture. And went through their process, and I got size for gear and all that. And then I went to do my physical, and I failed the stress test. So based on the NFPA 1982 and IFF workplace safety document, whatever it is, they had give you your target heart rate, which I think is sort of messed up. And I'm not just saying that because I failed it, but it's about 40 beats higher than what, I mean, lower than what your personal trainer or anything would ever tell you about your target heart rate, you know? And so they put you on the treadmill, and based on the amount of time it takes you to hit that target heart rate, they give you a score. Well, the score to get higher is 12, and I had a 10. And the doctor's like, you know, it's not my decision, but you got to talk to the chief, you know. So the next day, I went to talk to the deputy chief, and all their chiefs are awesome, just open door, welcoming, you know. Really cared, and he's like, you know, we just can't take the liability, you know, we can't hire you based on it. And that was a big punch in the gut, you know. And we had the house packed up, and we were expecting to move in 2 months, you know. Anyway, so came back and started trying to get in better shape, trying to get ready for that. And they said I could reapply, and I wouldn't have to do the CPAT and the written test. I would just resubmit my application, and they'll hire me, you know, after an interview. And so then we went up there, took my parents up there, showed them around, and I had a meeting with the chief, and he's like, "Oh, we're actually got to delay our next academy because our new station won't be ready." And we're like, "Dang, another year, in at Memphis, and Memphis has got a lot more good than there than people know about, but it's still not a great place to raise a family because a lot of bad stuff trickles into good areas, and you worry about the future. Everybody there that's been there for 30, 40, 50 years is like, you need to get out, go somewhere else, So that says a lot, So I'm coming up on 31 years old at this point. I'm like, I really need to pick a spot and slow down. And, it's more, Memphis changed my outlook. As much as I had fun, like if I didn't have a family, I'd probably still be there, but it's not about me anymore. Priorities change, And so right around that time, Franklin had raised her pay and raised her paramedic stipend. And I talked to their chief, and he was like, "You just need to make the list. I'd love to hire you, And so I went through their process and ended up getting hired a little over a year ago. And so I've been there a little over a year now. And it's kind of a weird deja vu thing coming into that fire department because all the older guys, they like me and they respect me, And then the younger guys are like, "Who is this guy?" But it's also deja vu because I grew up there, I know all the history, but I also was a teenager in these fire stations, and my dad worked there, So it's been a good place. It's a lot slower. It took me a while to get used to, but it's a good fire department for sending you the training, and they actually treat you like an asset more than a number, And so, I mean, they sent me to a lot of stuff in the first year. They paid full ride to go to FDIC. I went through a wildland academy. I went through ropes, several other classes in 1 year's time as a probie, So, and the family's in the better area now, close to our family. We didn't have any family in Memphis. That's another reason why we didn't stay. All our family was here. So, so that's where we're at now, bounced around a lot, but there's reasons for everything, either it was money or it was more opportunities for experience or better opportunities for the family, that's where it got me. I have no regrets, I could, it kind of, it's hard when like guys that you were hired with or rookies under you are promoted now, or they're about to test for captain and you're still a backup fireman for the fourth time, but it's good, most of those guys would have loved to do what I did, but due to their wives or families, they couldn't do that. Luckily I'm fortunate for my wife to give us that opportunity and let me go and explore, and give things a try, so that's where we're at now, Yeah, a wife. We've been married 2 years, 10 years. Excuse me, two kids. I'm currently the Secretary of Middle Tennessee Fools, serving under Dustin Clare's. I know you know Dustin. He's the president, and we've got a lot of good things coming in our Fools chapter. And serving as a volunteer with Murray County, Tennessee. Murray County's a very busy rural county, and just got its second tiller, but this one's newer and whatnot, and so that's awesome. So that's probably the last thing on my fire department bucket list is to rear the, till the rear of the tiller, So got that going, But that's where we're at right now. A long-winded past, but.
No, dude. So I'm gonna start by saying, if I could do it all over again myself, if I wasn't married, if I didn't have a child, I would definitely be part of an organization up north, the DMV area, somewhere around there that has that culture, that mentality. They want to go to jobs. They want to be firemen. The organization supports them being firemen. If I could do it all over again, I would. Like, I have some friends who, they'll work at their career jobs, and then they'll take a couple shifts off, and they'll go up, get their It's like they're fiends. They go up there, pull their volunteer shifts, get some fires, come back, and it's like a recharge. I wish I could do that. I can't. And that's okay. But I love the fact that you mentioned that, you went out, you were single, you didn't have anything really to lose, and you went out there and did it. You got those experiences. Those experiences made you who you are today. But one thing I want to talk about, in your opinion, reputation. You mentioned earlier how your reputation speaks for itself when it comes to the fire service. And I truly think certain individuals coming into the fire service, especially if they're a little bit younger, they don't understand what that means. They don't understand how you act today will reflect your future. And I'm not saying you can't change, because people do change, but a lot of individuals seem to forget the fact that how you carry yourself, your work ethic speaks volumes. So, what's your take on reputation?
Reputation is huge. My dad gave me some advice early on when I was in the career, and he said, treat every day when you get detailed or travel, to a different fire station, treat that as an interview. Make a good impression, because you never know who's going to want you to come work for them one day, and that's happened in every place I've worked in, where it comes an opportunity, an opening comes open, or they're looking to move people around, and all of a sudden you keep hearing about captains or senior firemen want you at their station, and sometimes you don't even hear about them until a move. Like when I was in Murfreesboro, I was at a very busy engine company that serves more of the bad parts of town, and also Middle Tennessee State University. So you're making all the runs on campus. Great place. It was a lot of fun. But they had an opening at the special ops station that's also really busy. And so I put in to go there. And since I had a good reputation, that's how it got me there. But when I went to Rescue 9, I heard of probably five or six different other firehouses that wanted me at their firehouse. I had no idea till they told me after. And even though I wouldn't have changed my decision, that's just awesome to know that you're doing the right thing, And same thing in Memphis. I didn't know anybody 17s. That my lieutenant on truck 8, he'd been on 30 years, and he didn't know me from Adam. But because people called on my behalf, that's what led him calling me back, And I think it's huge. So treat every day like it's your first day, and make good impressions. Do what you're supposed to be doing, and work hard, and it'll carry you further than you ever think it will,
Absolutely. Okay. Man, going through your experiences, going up riding at PG, anybody that knows me knows I'm a huge PG fan. I have a crush on PG, whatever, however you want to look at it. And some people ridicule me for it, but I like how they operate. I like how it's a firefighter first mindset. They're there for the mission. They want to be there. They want to get better. I love how, like you mentioned, when I went and rode for Kentland, like the guy told me, he was like, "Hey, just let you know when we get a call, like, get on the truck or they're leaving you. No questions asked." And it's like, okay, like that's the mentality we need to have. So with that being said, man, you got to work for Memphis Fire Department. Memphis is very heavy fire duty. A city that, unfortunately, firefighters can't help. There's certain things out of their control. I hope that Memphis, the city of Memphis, can get their stuff together. Here recently, they just got promised their 2.5% that they were promised a while back. There was a chairperson, or whatever, that lady who made that comment that went viral, but luckily they were able to get it done. But what was it like, man, walking through those doors wearing a Memphis Fire Department shirt on your back?
Man, it was like a dream come true. Memphis, yeah, it's heavy workload, fire and EMS. I highly recommend it to anybody that's listening that is young and wants to go be a fireman somewhere. It's an awesome place. It's probably the if you take out FDNY, Chicago, LA, Houston, they're probably the only place that's competitive with Detroit's and the amount of daily working fires,
Okay.
And but I also consider it the FDNY of the South as far as old school traditions, old firehouses, because a lot of the firehouses are really old. They still have a watchman every day. They still have daily log books. Old school traditions like that. It's a fun place to work. There's some houses that are tougher to work than others, as far as not just call volume, but the amount of pranks and just going horsing around all day, you know. But those were some of the best houses, you know, because the crews are tight, you know. They have a lot of camaraderie and brotherhood. There's a lot of guys that hang out off the job, you know, and there's tons of traditions, whether it's, you know, your birthday, you got to make your own cake. You can't buy a store-bought cake. One guy did that one day and we threw it off the roof. There's games like if everything has to be on a plate. If it's not on a plate, it gets smacked out of your hands, you know, stuff like that. But walking in the door there, and just going through an academy, just dreaming about working in a, you know, old firehouse and, you know, going through the ghetto, screaming down the road to a fire, you know, and it's an aggressive place. You know, the engines are going to push in on anything they can. And the trucks are going to cut a hole on anything they can until they're told not to, you know. And like my first really good house fire, there was fire out of every window and every door in this house, to the point where my lieutenant on the truck thought we were going to set the stick up. So we started dropping ground pads. When we walked around the back of the truck, engine 28 was pushing it in the front door. And he's like, all right, I guess we're going in. Yeah, you know, and but the level of experience and the officers there and the chiefs, you know, sometimes the chiefs would barely talk on the radio, just let the guys work. That he trusted the lieutenants on the engine and truck, you know. And they also have, they have four on everything, and they also have SOPs that are standard across the whole city. So now, no matter what apparatus you're riding and how you arrive, you know exactly what you're supposed to do. So, like my truck lieutenants, if I was riding inside on the truck and going inside with him, if I'm masked up before him, I'm going in. Like he knows where to find me. He knows exactly what my job should be and where I should be in that house. You know, and obviously that took some time to build that trust. You know, I didn't do that like my first ever house fire, but because all that's in place, I mean, fires just sort of like clockwork, you know. And obviously Memphis, not every single company is, you know, 100% on everything, you know. They're just because of the amount of people, there's 56 firehouses and there's about 1900 members that work for the Memphis Fire Department. So not everybody's going to be high speed, low drag, you know, but there is a lot of good battalions where it was, and I was fortunate to work in those. Learned a lot about leadership and a lot about experience in Memphis. You know, the only thing that I didn't, like I expected and didn't get was, you know, like you, I love the DMV area. I dreamed of working for DCFD. You know, I expected more daily drills, you know, more out in the street, stretching hose, throwing ladders and stuff. And we did that occasionally, but because of the amount of runs and the amount of fires, they didn't do that. There's a lot of guys who are resting because they're going to be up all night, or they know there's a good chance we're going to go to a fire. You know, and I had never worked anywhere like that, where every day your mindset is you're going to make a fire, you know, and some days you don't. You know, I made about 40 fires roughly in 3.5 years, you know, and I probably missed half of that being on the ambulance, you know. That's just part of it, you know, and the ambulance is rough, but it's just your, I always called it, it's your ticket to play. So you have to do that in order to get everything else, you know. And yeah, just an awesome fire department. They, when I was there, they had a mayor that was fully supportive of the fire department. And the council has never had the fire department's back fully. And there's been a lot of trial and error, bad things that have happened, you know, over the, you know, last 10, 15 years. They took the pension away in 2013 and they closed a bunch of companies, you know. So It's been slowly, progressively getting better, and they had a lot of apparatus issues. But the problem they had, what you're speaking of, is that mayor left, and they got a new mayor in, and so it's that's not fully supportive of the fire department. And then the chief there at the time, that she did her time, and a lot of she progressed the fire department, but it was getting sort of stagnant. There's some issues, and now they have Colin Bress in there, and Colin came up through the ranks. He was a lieutenant on Rescue 2 for years, and he was the pick everybody wanted. He's a do your job, as long as you're wearing a fire department shirt, I don't care. Just I expect you to do your job type of chief, And so good things I think are ahead for the fire department. The council still isn't fully on board, but hopefully he can help sway their decisions, But yeah, a great place to work. It was a dream come true, in the work in that single truck and then going to a dual house, just awesome. There's a lot of engine and truck rivalry, and then you have the rescue companies, that are the rescue companies, and but yeah, I can't speak enough good about it. I have no regrets going there. It was a
All right.
blast.
So come back full circle. You're now with Franklin Fire Department. For those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about the department size, how many personnel, apparatus, things of that nature?
Franklin has 8 stations right now. About 42, 44 people on duty every day. Have see a few engines, 3 towers. We have 4 Clints right now that are going to turn into, 2 of them are going to turn into engines soon. 1 heavy rescue. We have it's divided into this. 3 different stations cover special ops. So, well, 4 different stations. Station 1 and 8 have swift water. Station 2 and Station 5 do technical rescue. So the heavy rescue runs out of Station 2. And they, you've, in order to ride the rescue, you have to have all your classes. So they do all the technical rescue. And then we have a hazmat Station 2 that has a really nice hazmat truck. And yeah, that's about it. Looking to build a ninth station and add another tower company. Kind of in those growing pain stages because, 30, 35 years ago, Franklin still had volunteers. In my dad's time, they went from 2 stations to 8 stations, about a span of 28 years, 25, 28 years, so it's a lot of growth. And they had a chief for a long time that was really not a good, not a fireman's chief. And he was more worried about EMS and created, wasn't creating good culture, and they went through a lot of bad times under him. But now the chief that's in place came up through the ranks. I mean, he worked every single rank and it's well respected. And, but now at the same time, you got all these guys that 25, 30 years that are retired. So in 5 years from now, the fire department, like 50% of the fire department is going to be gone. And it's going to be all younger guys. So for the longest time, Franklin had a good mix of young, middle of the road, senior guys, and now it's going to be a lot more, younger guys and that 15, 20 year guys, coming up. And that's going to create challenges. But I think we got a lot of good guys get promoted to engineer, lieutenant, and also the chief that supports them. The chief's all about, being the fire department first. We make a ton of med runs, but he has no interest taking over EMS, and EMS doesn't want us, And so he's fully supportive of the fire department and special operations, So, and fortunately, Franklin has got a lot of money. So Williamson County, Tennessee, where Franklin's located, probably has more money than the entire Middle of Tennessee region combined. And so our union's done a good job getting council members elected. We call them aldermen, actually, but that are fully supportive of the fire department. So I say probably like 90% of the aldermen love the fire department and the police department. So it's really paying off to get things approved, like we're replacing a station coming up and getting a new station and adding another tower company, so
Okay.
good
And
place. Just
as far as your staffing levels, what's your staffing levels throughout the throughout all 8 stations?
we typically ride three on everything. So that's the only caveat, to us is we minimum staffing. Well, you have four sometimes, if nobody's off, like right now, we have everybody there. Like yesterday, we had 14 people at our station. We rode four on everything. But it's the first of the year where nobody's taking vacation,
Right.
So typically, when we only have like one extra guy, and there's the debate whether the extra guy should be on the engine or the tower, you could argue they particularly put the fourth man on the tower and off so they can do more truck work. But also, you could argue that fourth man being on the engine to help advance the line in place, Franklin doesn't run a lot of fires. I'd say it's probably only like 40 structure fires a year, and that's ranging from a small kitchen fire to actually a good working fire. So it's not a lot of fires. It's been picking up here lately. But it's what it is, and as the city gets older, that's bound to change, But yeah, a very good department and supporting its members by getting whatever you need for the job, uniforms, equipment, stuff in the stations. I mean, they buy our coffee creamer, our coffee creamer, all our cleaning supplies. They would even buy shoe polish. Like when I got to station two, I didn't have a locker, so they went to Home Depot and bought me a tote on the city's dime, if you go to training out of state, they pay for your meals and all that, we're very fortunate in what they allow us to have,
Okay.
yeah.
And as far as are all members required to be EMT basics? Because it sounds like you're, I don't know, are you still a paramedic?
I'm a paramedic still. Yeah. So
Okay.
no, you only have to, so our guys that just came out of the fire academy, we hired our first intern class. So we hired interns and recruits. And so what the intern program is that just started is brand new high school graduates in Williamson County can apply to it. And so we hired like, I want to say 4 or 5 18-year-olds and a few other guys that, like my rookie is 33 years old, but this brand first ever fire job, So they hired a few recruits, and then they hired laterals in between. So the guys going through the fire academy get first responder in the academy, and then they have the ability to go to EMT, AEMT, paramedic if they want, and the city will pay for it. So you're
Gotcha.
not required to be an EMT, but there's benefits to it, like advanced EMTs get $5,000 extra a year, paramedics get $11,500 a year. So guys are definitely going after those certifications and trying to get them. So we try that we operate ALS on everything, but we're kind of short medics right now, so that doesn't always happen. But most guys are EMT or advanced EMT.
Okay. All right. And as far as if you get a first due structural box, just to say house fire, what's Franklin's first alarm assignment consist of?
Is three or four engines, two towers, a rescue, a chief, a district captain, and the air truck. And we used to have a fast car, but it's been out of service to make staffing for the district captain. So they just started a district captain program where all the cap they only used to they have nine captains per shift. Everybody else is a lieutenant. And typically, those captains would ride the towers, and but now they put them in a car, so it's an additional safety officer or division soup on fires, and they're trialing that program right now because they fought for years to get a second battalion chief, and the city's always denied it, so they're trying to find a different way, and so now the captains are in cars, so we'll get a district there as well. That first in box.
Okay.
So
All right. And the little I know about Tennessee, I know that there are certain jurisdictions where it is very massive territory you guys cover. So are your stations kind of close to each other or separated by a good bit?
Yeah, ours are pretty close together. Probably they're anywhere from, 5 to 7, 8 minutes away from each other. So they're pretty close. Franklin is roughly like 44 square miles, and we have 8 stations. So there's like outdoors are the cities expanding more out to the east. So some of our territory personally would be, we could have a 9 minute run to some of these places, and that's where they're looking to build that new station, but most of the time, by the time you arrive on scene and you're stretching the line, you can hear the next thing company coming to you,
Okay.
not as close as Memphis was, but pretty close together, and we have City of Brentwood's above to our north, and we have automatic gate with them. Anything in the northern part of our city, which we call Cool Springs, big shopping area, every the malls over there, Costco's over there, all that gets an automatic gate engine and chief from Brentwood. And then everything else in the county is mutual aid.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. As far as mentorship goes, man, it sounds like you've been fortunate. You know, you mentioned you're third generation. You have family members that have been a part of the fire service. And it definitely sounds like your dad gave you some solid advice. So how important is it for others to, whether they want to refer to them as mentors or not, but how important is it to have, if you're in this job, to have somebody you can call, pick their brain, ask questions, look up to?
I mean, it's critical to this job. Luckily, I did have a lot of good mentors in every place I worked. When I was in that small Las Casas volunteer department, I had a guy that was a friend of mine, but also a mentor that I was like, man, I'm turning 18. I can fight fire now, and I could be riding an engine in the front seat because there's only two of us. Like, what are things that I need to know? How do you do a 360? Well, there's some tactical decisions I need to know, and he taught me that, and then going into all these other cities, there was somebody there or a few people there that would take me aside and teach me things, and that taught me mentorship along the way, my dad also, when I was early on, it didn't have a lot of, close friends, on the actual departments I worked with. If I made a bad call, I could call him, and
Right.
talk to him, and then in Murfreesboro was like the first time I ever had an opportunity to be a true mentor myself. And whether, like you said, whether it's an official mentor program or, somebody actually calls you that or not, I love teaching new guys stuff. I love teaching them the stuff that are required in the academy, but also, like, you make a fire alarm or a fire with a guy and be like, hey man, you should carry this tool and this is why, or hey man, don't wear your gear like that, because all that stuff's not taught in the academy. Like my rookie recently, we have typically run with three, and you have the irons and the can on your side and the engine, and he had left the can at the front door and just took the Halligan. I'm like, well, what are you going to strike the Halligan with? I'm like, what if we go deep in this store and find the fire? Like, where's the can, And I'm like, I'm not being hard on you, but these are things that you got to think about, and they don't teach you this, and like his chin strap was, and that's something on the training grounds, on the drill ground, they want your chin strap tight, so your helmet doesn't fall off, or something falls in your head. I get that in training, but in the real world, if you make a fire and you need to go mask up real quick, now you got to unloosen your chin strap. Those are little things that they don't teach you. And I love that stuff, and just little better ways to do things. But when I was in Murfreesboro and I was on Rescue 9, it was such a young department that I had 3.5 years on, and I was considered a senior firefighter on the back of the set of the rescue. That's crazy, but that's how it was.
Right.
So we did an academy class, and the top three get the pick where they want to go. And so number two guy in our class and our recruit class decided to come to our crew. That's where he wanted to go. How he picked that, I don't know to this day, but he came over, and then another newer-ish guy came over at the same time. And my captains were like, we'll definitely train them, we'll definitely guide them along, but you have the full range to mentor them and train them. We trust you. You can do that. So I created an expectations list, when they came in the door, and I set them down. It's like, look, I'm not here to be your friends. I have tons of friends. I don't need another one. I'm here to make sure that you're a good fireman when you leave here. And that when you leave, either leave the station for a new assignment or you're getting detailed for the day, that grips in this well and that you perform well and you go home safe. And so every day we worked on stuff and we drilled and we talked about things. And one of my favorite thing ever is to spread the love for the job. So like, okay, we're gonna watch Backdraft and Ladder 49, and we're gonna watch Rescue Me, and like some downtime. Or like, I've created a rookie entertainment playlist on YouTube that has about 95 videos that I'll send a new guy. Hey man, when you're at home, here's stuff you can be watching. And it's got stuff from TV shows, documentaries, training tips from Brass Tacks, Hard Facts, all that fire engineer training minutes. And so in I say, if you have any questions about anything, bring it to me, when you come back to work, and let's talk about it, or text me, And I love that because I think having a strong mentor, your first assignment will dictate your whole 30 years. If a guy or girl comes out from the fire academy and they have a crappy crew, a bad house, that's not going to set them up for a good career. They could easily, in their first year, become one of those people. But if they have solid mentors and people that actually care to teach them the job and show them love for the job, that's going to totally dictate the rest of their career. And that's what happened to this new rookie. And ended up, he did become my best friend. But that's the influence that I put on him, is because I don't think if he went to a different house than our crew, I think he would have been a totally different fireman. I mean, he was also a multi-generation fireman and all that, always wanted to be a fireman, but a bad crew still could have had a negative impact on him. And what's huge, and what, the two best things that compliments I ever got was your typical good job on a fire or education or something, or, hey man, you did a good job with that guy, he's a solid dude now, and that's huge. I love that, so mentorship is huge, and that's where I'm looking forward to the future of my career. Like I take this rookie aside, every now and then, and teach him stuff, but I wasn't given the same talk from my officers I was from Murfreesboro. So I'm not taking full control over him, but in the future, I want to try to build a formal mentorship program and have more of that. And then that's what's also, I think, with promotion and stuff, my company officer is still a goal, but I think that's one of the most influential spots in the fire service, based on teaching your guys under you, but also dictating the tactics and operations of your crew, and how you go about your daily firehouse life, So that's your goal. But yeah, mentorship is huge. I can't, you don't have to be a formal mentor to mentor somebody. Take the rookie, teach him, everything that you wish you would have been taught, and teach them love for the job. One of those things that are huge is when, and I've done this twice now, when that rookie had his first house fire, I took the picture of the fire that we had when we first got on scene, and I put the date, the address, and some comment like rookie's first fire or something like that. And I framed it. And the next shift at dinner time, in front of the whole crew, we presented it to them. And so that, they'll never forget their first fire, but they're definitely not going to forget it now. That's huge. And we just did it for our rookie a few months ago, and then also gave him an original copy of the report from Engine Company 82. And I said, read this book, pass, keep it, pass it on to the next guy you have under you. But those things, they stand out. There's guys in this job that won't even speak to the rookie, and I totally get that. They got to earn their place and all that. But who's going to teach them?
Right.
if nobody's speaking to him and nobody's training him, you know, how is he going to turn out? If we want good people 10, 15, 20 years from now, it starts day one. You know, they're not going to always get there on their own. They could. They could be an absolute rock star and, you know, on the job, in the firehouse, you know, off the job, good person, you know, but more than likely, it's going to take a little push from their crew to get them there, you know. So yeah, mentorship's huge.
Okay. Love it. Love the advice. I'm pretty sure I'm gonna know how you feel about this, but I'm gonna ask anyways. Outside training, getting outside of the four walls of your organization, man, how important is that for others to understand?
And that's huge and very important. You got to get outside your bubble. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with your bubble, but you're very limited to what you learn and know. You know, there's, you know, some fire departments that only go to state classes, you know, at the state academy, you know, and there's some fire departments that don't allow you to go after additional certifications or go to, you know, conferences. And, you know, that's one thing that was huge growing up. You know, we had a few small conferences around here, and we had guys that would go to FDIC. And so I got in on that earlier. People showing me, you know, just like we talked about, teaching them to love the job through me. And then also my wife fully supports it. But she said, you need to get as much training as you can because that's going to keep you safer. That also will keep you recharged. And, you know, if you're not happy, she knows that if I'm not happy with the job, I'm not having a good time, it affects everything else, you know. I mean, family does come first, God, family, fire, but, you know, the fire is my life, really. You know, it's my hobby. You know, I always tell people that I like sports, but I can't tell you every play on every team and how many touchdowns or how many goals in hockey they made. But I can go to FDIC and I can point people out and be like, oh, that's Ray McCormack, you know, that's Scott Thompson, you know. Or they start talking about the fire department. I'm like, oh, yeah, they have this many firehouses, you know. I'm a nerd in that aspect, you know, but it comes from that love for the job and going to classes. But also, it's important because you get stuck. Whether you're on a bad crew or just the fire service culture isn't great in your area, you go out of these outside trainings and you're surrounded by like-minded guys and that love the job and are passionate. And you get to hear war stories from other fire departments that you've always looked up to, like DC, FDNY, Chicago. And it's like, you know, and it's huge. I mean, I can't recommend it enough. You know, I remember at, you know, the training is really good. Like I went to FD10 for the first time this year. And it is expensive, but it is worth every penny. I left every day smiling. I was tired and I even got burned a little bit, but I had a blast. It was everything I wanted. And everything there, their instructors are humble, and they also all their skills you're actually doing are simple. They're not overcomplicating anything. They're not reinventing the wheel. And all their scenarios and the live fire boot camp or live fire camp, they call it, is straightforward. You know, like you don't even go, besides the basement prop, you don't even go upstairs. But there's real fire, there's real smoke. You can't see anything. It's getting hot. You're exhausted. And like the instructors there actually did those things in their career, whether they did them last week or they did them 15 years ago. You know, like the guys on RIT, you know, they had guys from Charlotte teaching RIT that 6 months before that pulled a dude out, you know. But they all introduced themselves. They're like, hey, I'm Tony from Boston. Or, I'm Bob from New York. And it's Bob Pressler, you know. And just humble, you know, and they're like, if you can't perform, if something happens, nobody's going to talk about it. You just come out, regroup, and get back in there if you can. And they said, Bob Pressler said, if any of these instructors mock you, laugh at you, talk shit about you, after a scenario, we're gonna put our arms around each other and wave that dude goodbye. And that's how awesome FDTM was. You know, they just want you to be better, and the basics always work. You know, the RIT guys were like, you can try webbing, you can try all these fancy things, but we've seen it doesn't work. Convert the guy's pack and pull them out, you know, and it's simple stuff like that. So I highly recommend FTTN if you can afford it. I was fortunate. I just sold my house in Memphis, so we had a little extra money. I got to go, but now I'm going to go on like a 2-year savings plan to go again, you know. FDIC is great, but just remember FDIC is for the brotherhood and the connections and the training. It's not to go up there and drink and party all weekend, you know. You know, one of the best FDICs, I went to Bobby Halton give the opening ceremony speech of the best job I ever had, you know. And if you totally look up that ceremony, if you haven't seen it, it's an awesome speech. But 2 days later, we're at the union party. Indy's Union Hall, if nobody's ever been, is they're an old firehouse with their union hall attached, and they have live band, they'll have free beer, they'll have food, and they typically do a pumper pool, you know, pipes and drums come and play, and they have their line of duty memorial right there. And we're standing there around the line of duty memorial because we were told by the pipes and drums guys that they were going to play there. And they come down the street. Bobby Halton is arm in arm with the leaders of the pipes and drums in his chore coat with all his patches on, you know. And they come in and they play Amazing Grace and all the songs. And I just really want to go up to Chief Halton and be like, best damn job I ever had, you know. It's just awesome. But those are the experiences that you don't get unless you go out there, you know, and meet people. You know, you can be sitting in a bar having a beer, and a guy says, hey man, can I slide in here and order a drink? And this actually happened. I said, yeah, sure, man. Guy ended up being a battalion chief in New Jersey. And like a month prior, they made a 10 alarm fire where they drained the water mains and were having to draft out of the river. So that's how much water they're flowing on this building. And that's what he was telling us, showing us pictures. And those are experiences you don't get anywhere else. You know, and there's conferences everywhere. We're in a good age of information, whether social media or small town conferences. I mean, there's probably a conference within less than 5 hours from you somewhere, you know, at all different price points. I highly recommend it, you know. Yeah,
Love it.
definitely outside training, get it out there and learn something new. Even if, you know, you can't apply FDNY stuff and Chicago stuff to your area necessarily. But that guy could teach you something about a ladder, stretching hose, or something that you didn't know before. And you can come implement that and show your guys on your crew, you know. Get out there and train. You can't get enough of it, you know, and recharge your batteries. You know, if you love this job, go to some of those conferences. Yeah.
Hell yeah, solid advice, man. Okay. What is your term of aggressive? You know, it's a buzzword. You see, I mean, hell, I own a couple hats, some shirts that talk about aggressive firefighting. But what is your, in your opinion, what does aggressive mean to you?
Well, I think aggressiveness came from because you didn't really hear that a whole lot, you know, 10, 15 years ago. You know, I think it adopted from the safety culture where they're trying to make everything safer. And, you know, that's hard to do on this job. It's always going to be dangerous. You know, Dennis Smith said only the best way to put out fire is getting up close to it and putting water on it, you know, in that Warriors documentary, you know. But I think it came from that because they're trying to make the job safer, and then all of a sudden these guys are doing their job and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they're moving fast and they're competent. I think it came to describe guys that are competent and well trained as aggressive, but that's not necessarily saying they're dangerous. They're just have a different mentality. They know what needs to be done, what we're here, you know, we're here for the citizens. I know that we're fire first, you know, that sorry,
No, you're
that
good.
the fire needs to go out by the line getting in place, and I need to have a search fast because people only have a limited time. Now we need to make the roof or vent a window, to help the engine. They know all these things, They know exactly what their job is to do. So people got afraid of them. I think these firemen that are middle of the road or the bottom percenters get intimidated by guys like that, because they have never gone out and trained. They're lazy. They're riding their recliners every day, and they're like, oh, that guy's just aggressive. Well, no, more than likely that person just knows what needs to be done and gets the job done. And he knows it needs to be done fast,
Right.
and that's where aggressive came from. But, mentorship is what's going to set that foundation. If you love to be an aggressive, you need to teach that rookie that. It's not, you're not teaching them to be aggressive and be stupid. You're teaching them the job and telling them why it's important, him or her. And he's inherently going to be aggressive because he knows his job. You've trained him. He's confident in his skills. He wants to do those skills, And so that's where he's going to be aggressive, And I think also it's not just aggressive engine work. It's not just aggressive truck work. It's doing, knowing what needs to happen when you're there. Now you go to a fire alarm and, oh, I need a can, I need irons, so I need to go to the panel, I need to have Knox keys, whatever. That is competency, And if we want safety, in the safety driven culture of fire service, you want competent people, is knowing what needs to be done next is what's gonna get you the label as aggressive. It's not like you're gonna. Now there is some situations where, okay, that's the only window we can be. Yes, and 60% of the fire service want to bell off in the window, but those top percenters will. Yeah, that is aggressive, but they know what needs to be done. They know that's the job. The job is dangerous. There could be a kid or a person in that window. They know they have to go in there. They can occupy the space by their training or their gear. We need to be occupying it, And we don't get to determine survival. We don't know what that person's fate is. Our job is to get in there and get them out. And so, yes, that is aggressive. But if we would turn the tide of the fire service and start mentoring everybody to that mindset, the aggressive term would go away. And it would just be well trained, well competent, high speed, low drag firefighters, and I really think that's what aggressiveness is, and we could, that could be less of a buzzword if we would just mentor our people and do what we're supposed to, on fires.
Facts. Facts. Yes, sir. Okay. All right. When it comes to recruitment and retention, man, in your opinion, what do you see the fire service doing well on, and where can they improve when it comes to those two?
I think what we do well on is when we do have an opportunity to show or tell somebody about the job, we do well telling them, but we have less opportunities. Like, obviously, recruitment numbers are way lower than they used to be, but I feel like this day and age, people don't know about the job. They truly don't know. They know we exist, but they don't know what our daily lives are like, what the benefits of having this job is, And so I think we really need to go after those. I think we're doing a good job with the high school kids, like, we don't recruit. We want people to be there that want to be there. But I don't think it's a bad idea to go set up a table next to the Marines and the Navy and the Army, hey, we're not giving you a job, but here's what it is if you want to come after it. Some of the volunteer departments have started to put previews, like almost like a trailer for the fire department in the movie theater. I think that's awesome. The YouTube thing, like the PIOs out west are doing really good work. That's huge to show the inner workings of the fire department and what goes on in the fire academy. I think we need more of that, but just getting the word out, I think a lot of people just don't know about it, and a lot of people, it's kind of a secret society in a way, that when people don't know about our job and then they come in the firehouse and man, like, oh, in between calls, you guys get to watch football and work out and eat together, you know, and then you get multiple days off. Like, that's awesome, you know. Well, that's what people need to know about. Like, they need to know what this job is all about, what we're actually there for. But here's all the additional benefits. Like, and ever, you know, in the last 10 years, they've been pushing on kids college, college, college. And trades have been going down, and recruitment numbers also. Like, these kids need to know options. You know, they don't know that the fire department is an option. They don't know how to get into it. You know, I think that's where we can do better. Retention, we got to keep guys there. You know, we got to make it a good culture, good environment for them to want to stay. You know, we need to make people more valued in this job. You know, and create an environment where they just love going to work. And that's back to creating the love for the job and having a good daily firehouse life. You know, that's what's going to keep people. Obviously, pay is huge and time off is huge, benefits and all that. But if guys and girls truly love coming to the firehouse every day they have to work, then that's going to keep them there also, you know. But yeah, I think that's sort of recruitment and retention. You know, we need to promote the job better, but we also need to keep people by making the job what they thought it was when they applied, you know.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And definitely being a little bit honest and transparent. Because a lot of departments, I follow their videos, they show a lot of fire, which is great. They do go to the fire, but we also go to a lot of medicals. And what is an emergency to the citizens that is calling, when we get there, is really not an emergency. It's an emergency to them, but we're there to help support that. But I think a lot of them are starting to realize it too, where it's like, hey, we can't just say we do this and that. I think if you're more transparent and you're more honest, then more individuals are going to know, okay, this is okay, so this is what you guys mostly run percentage-wise in between the makes of where you get to see fire and things like that.
Yeah, and you know, medical is not going anywhere. You know,
No.
you might as well get good at it and, you know, find some way to kind of enjoy all the, you know, BS runs are definitely not enjoyable, you know. But I think when we have ride alongs and we have explorers, you know, ride with us, it's important to show them, like, hey, this job's good because every day's different. You know, we're not always going to run 8 med calls a day, you know, could run 8 fire calls. And show them that that's important, you know. But it is what it is. That's what keeps us employed, you know.
That's right.
And hopefully that the tide will turn, that you know you'll have more fire duty shifts than med duty shifts. But it is what it is. But it's at least keeping us on the rig, you know.
That's right. That's right. Okay. I always like to ask the guests this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
My goal is to be a company officer, you know, not for the title or the rank, you know, it's just for like what we talked about, influential part of the fire service. You can do more mentorship. You can throughout the rookie firefighter, your senior firefighter, your driver, if you can help train them, teach them, you know, guide them through life, you know. But also, you can run the fire company how you always want to run it. If you've had bad leaders, if you've worked for guys that don't want to do anything, you can change that. You know, you have that bit of change, you know. And like, so for example, you know, you come to work and you're like, hey, let's go stretch today. You know, we're going to do a daily stretch every day, or we're going to throw ladders every day. But it'd just be like a 30-minute thing. It's like, all right, let's go get an energy drink, you know. And then, you know, give me the first 6 hours of your day and then hang out. But you can create that culture in that environment where guys don't want to go off in their rooms. They want to stay together. They want to hang out all the time, you know. And I've worked in a lot of good crews where there's 10 dudes hanging in the office that's clearly built for three people, you know, but they, as long as everybody's together, that's where they want to be, you know, and that's the culture you can build as a fire, as an officer. I would like to be a chief maybe one day, not for a long time. I think it'd be hard to transition away from a firehouse. And like you're there, but you're not there. I'm gonna get away from the crews, you know. But nobody in my family's ever been above the rank of captain. So I think that'd be pretty cool one day. Just add an extra bugle just to say that I did, you know. And also in this span, I get to hold the rank, change the fire department in a good direction wherever it needs to go at the time, you know. That's where I would like to see before I hang it up, you know.
Okay. You mentioned earlier how, you were able to take a path that not very many get to do. You've been fortunate to work for different organizations, see different things. It has shaped your mindset. It has shaped you as a human, as a man. It has matured you. But you said one thing that it kind of struck with me, and I want to tell you, like, don't feel a certain way about it. You had mentioned that now that you're back at Franklin, individuals that when you were there before, they were the same rank as you, and now some are like engineers and promoting to potentially promoting the captain and things like that. And you kind of feel like the last one. So it resonated with me because I think about my recruit class. I think there was like 18 or 21, either way. But I was the last one for the ones that left to go to different organizations or they got out of the fire service entirely. The group that remained, I was the last one to get promoted to lieutenant, which is like our full-time engineer's position, but part-time officer whenever your captain's off. But I was the last one to hit that mark. And so I stayed as a backstep slash relief driver for 18 years, while others that were in the same class with me promoted to lieutenant. Some are captains. And I never let that once, like, I don't know, I never let it once deter me or made me feel a certain way because I was on the path that I was supposed to be on, you know? So finally now I'm at a rank where that's where I wanted it. This is where I want to be. And so what I want to tell you is when it's your time, it's your time, you know? And I'm sure you've enjoyed the hell out of your ride. I mean, to say that you worked for here, you worked for there, you went and rode here, you attempted here, you worked for Memphis. Not very many people can say that. So, dude, I just want to tell you, Bo, when it's your time to be company officer, it's going to happen. You're going to be a great company officer because of all the influences you've had in your life. And so that way, like, I just want you to hear it from somebody else, man. Like, don't worry about you're still a backstep. That's great. And I'm sure you'll be the best damn backstep firefighter that you have to be. But like everybody's on their own path. Some people promote way too early, in my opinion. But hey, if that's what they want to do, cool. Enjoy the ride. I'm sure you're enjoying it. But I just wanted you to hear from somebody else.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it'll come with time. It'll come, you know, with opportunities. So it'll come, you know. Yeah, it's just you have a few life transitions and it gets rough looking back on time. You know, it's hard, you know, and each one of those places was hard to leave because you had such good friends, good crews, you know, but they're all for the better. They're all for growth, you know. And I challenge anybody listening that's thinking about jumping ship to going somewhere else or going to a different crew, you know. It's like Aaron Phillips said, comfort is the enemy of growth, you know. Like, don't be afraid to take a step outside your comfort zone and try something new, because you'll have a blast. You'll be everything and more than you're expecting it to be, you know. Just know, like, yeah, you might not progress as fast as others because you decide to do this or that, you know, but the experience that you're going to get from not only call volume or people or training, it's going to be worth it in the end, you know. And that just continue to build a good reputation, continue to pass down the love for the job and everything you've learned along the way to others. Yeah, and we'll get there eventually, you know. And when time is time, it'll be time, you know, and we'll do it, you know.
That's right.
But for now, yeah, like you said, just enjoy the ride, you
Hell
know.
yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. Bo, I want to appreciate you for accepting the phone call, accepting the invitation, coming on and talking shop. I like to give credit where it's due. Dustin Sinclair was the reason why this happened. Obviously, what you're doing, Dustin sees it because that's how it works. Like, people don't just go, oh, I got a guy for you. And it's like a person that's not worthy. You know what I mean? Like a person that's not into the job. It's always somebody who's making an impact, making a difference that others see, like, hey, this person right here. So, Dustin, thank you for getting Bo's contact to me and making this connection happen. I appreciate you. Appreciate everybody else that has done that for me in the past on many, many, many other guests. Bo, thanks for taking time out of your day to do this. I know it was a little bit out of your comfort zone, but you killed it. I love hearing people's stories of how they got into the fire service and their experiences, man. So, one brother to another, man, I gotta say, I appreciate you, pal.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yeah, thanks for Dustin. He's been a mentor to me, and his love for the job is very impactful and contagious to others, so I appreciate that. But yeah, the podcast is awesome. Keep doing it. I know you're sort of getting down your list of names, so hopefully you'll get more. What I love about your podcast and others is that you ask questions and you just listen, because I hate listening to a fire podcast where you're trying to hear this guy's story, and then there's tons of different side comments, questions, like just or sound effects. Like, just let this guy talk. That's who we're here to listen to. But so keep up the good work. Hopefully, you get more names because I definitely don't want Student of the Game to end.
I appreciate that, bud. I appreciate that 100%, man. Means the world to me. But yeah, man, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, appreciate being on here. It's awesome.
Yes, sir.